Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of The Proteomics Show. This is a special limited series of The Proteomics Show sponsored by US HUPO called The Road to Chicago, where we talk to people that are coming to Chicago to speak at US HUPO.
I'm Ben Osborne. I'm here with Mr. Nister himself, Dr. Benjamin Neely.
Thank you. And this episode, we talked to Shin Chen from UNC Chapel Hill. Talked a little bit about all of the things he does. We got to learn about chemoprecipitation, which is not the same as immunoprecipitation, the translatome, and a little bit kind of a consistent story of a tortuous path to proteomics. So definitely listen and enjoy. Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Ben Osborne Experience. We are here with Shin Chen. Thank you for coming today, Shin.
Yeah, thank you to have me.
Yeah, and so the reason we're here is, again, we're all going to Chicago in March, and you're going to be presenting. And so you don't really need to start by talking about that talk, but just like briefly, like, what do you do? What's your research kind of centered around?
Yeah, my lab is more interesting both developing and applying state-of-art proteomics technologies. These days, we are trying to correlate data from different omics approaches to do multi-omics studies. So we're interested in molecular mechanisms of pathogenesis. So we're interested in COVID-19 pathogenesis, mechanisms underlying type 1 diabetes, Alzheimer's diseases, mostly those chronic inflammatory associated diseases.
Okay.
So our purpose is to discover mechanisms of pathogenesis, then mechanistically derive disease markers or new drug targets. So we recently we had success with COVID-19. So for this Chicago meeting, I'm going to talk about a non-canonical translation control of COVID-19 pathogenesis.
Awesome.
Developed a therapeutic strategy we filed provisional patent application. So, like I said, you know, we're more interested in problems that cannot be biological problems that cannot be solved by other biological approaches. So one highlight I'm actually the inventor of a technology termed as STALEC, stable isotope labeling in cell culture. So my lab introduced this technology in 2000. We published on analytical chemistry at that time. So later on, we developed an array of quantitative proteomic approaches to study magnetic components, meaning differentially expressed proteins, differentially modified proteins, or protein-protein interactions. So we found the powerful applications of quantitative proteomics in magnetic dissection.
Wow. So when you say multi-omics, I think that means a lot of different things. Like if you talk to transcriptomics people, you know, that multi-omics is methylation. What's multi-omics in the context of your work?
Yes. So, as you probably already aware of that the mass spec compared to DNA sequencers has limited sensitivity, right? So for most of the proteins, we cannot identify 100% sequence coverage that can distinguish patient-specific alterations at protein level. So at this point, of course, RNA-seq or DNA-seq, you can get patient-specific alterations at DNA and RNA level. So our strategy is to, you know, develop sort of, say, tissue-compatible technology, chemoproteomic technology, that we can identify reservoirs of biomarkers or, you know, the proteins are involved in cell function. Then we track we tend to identify which proteins actually, or which patient-specific genomes are modified or differentially expressed at protein level. So once we identify proteins, we track to their original genome or RNA data to see what are those patient-specific alterations.
Gotcha. So it's kind of a two-way street where you're using the RNA and genomics data one direction and then also back the other direction from the protein. And
exactly.
Back.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I should have faced better. We do that just like Ben, you said, we do the correlation in both ways. So we identify and look for their genomic or patient-specific genomic alterations. For those altered genomic sequences or RNA expression, we look for their protein expression difference. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, no. You often see people going one direction with it. I'm taking the RNA. I'm just using that for my FASTA database, and then you don't see it going back. So, and it's obviously important information going both directions.
Right, right, right. Another reason we do that is because there's a poor correlation between RNA expression versus protein expression, right?
Yeah.
Go on. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all right. Yeah.
I was going to ask more, about what you just said. Sorry, that's why I jumped in. So the whole RNA, because I feel like we talked about this nonstop, right, for like the last 20 years, this whole, you know, RNA is not protein. Protein right. Abundance is not, you know, even though we like to say, people say protein expression, right? We're studying gene expression, protein abundance. And your lab also studies, I feel like you were kind of getting at that, with the quantification, you also study like turnover dynamics and things like that, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So go ahead.
No, that's kind of where I was going with that. Yeah. Can you tell me more about how you do that?
Yeah. So for this Chicago talk, I'm going to present the data from translatome proteomics, meaning we're looking for the turnover rates or the rate of protein synthesis and the protein degradation. So basically, so so the, I need to give a little bit of background for this. So for COVID, okay, the story started from our chemoproteomic analysis. So the chemoproteomic approach we developed is termed as CHECK, chromatin activity-based chemoproteomics. So meaning we're using small biotinylated inhibitor of the enzyme we're interested in. Okay, so use that to do like immunoprecipitation. So, but in this case, it's like chemoprecipitation. So okay. The difference between chemoprecipitation versus immunoprecipitation is that we only pull down protein complex associated with active target. Okay, so the protein complex going to come from the specific genes. So the genes associated with chromatin where this enzyme is active. And also this way we can, without the cell sorting, we can pull down protein complex specifically from diseased cells. Okay, so for the COVID case, so we start we apply this CHECK approach to analyze PBMC peripheral blood monocyte cells. So as you know, that's from COVID patients. Okay, so the PBMC are mix of different cell types. Then from the clinical data, RNA-seq data, we found that the protein we're interested in, that is the histone methyltransferase called G9A. G9A form complex to be functional in cell in particular type of cells. So then we found that G9A and it known components, complex component, are all upregulated in severe patients. Okay, severe patient samples. So we know really? That this enzyme is involved in COVID-19 pathogenesis. Then we use a CHECK to pull down the protein complex associated with enzymatic active G9A. Now, surprisingly, we found so G9A is a methyltransferase of histone H3K9 dimethyl. So any genes associated with chromatin with H3K9 dimethyl tends to be transcriptionally silenced. Okay. However, in this protein complex we pull down from COVID-19 patient PBMC, we identify a lot of interactors. They are translation regulators. Mm. So meaning that suggests G9A may serve as a translation regulator. So then comes the translatome proteomic design. We then use the G9A inhibitor, just like proteasome inhibitor, right? So we treat cells then collect for different time period and collect the time result, snapshots to do proteomic profiling. So this way we're able to see what are those, because the readout translation is much faster than readout transcription, right? The transcription happen, over hours or 12 hours, 24 hours, but the translation can happen immediately. Ooh. Translate from messenger RNA, right? So this way we get samples at a different time point following the inhibitor treatment. Then we have a model to calculate the rate of synthesis and degradation for each individual proteins. So this way, we validate indeed G9A act as translation regulator in COVID-19 cases.
That's super cool. Keep going. Sorry.
Elegant.
Once we identify those proteins, meaning we term as the proteins showing G9A dependent translation as G9A translated the proteins, right? So we go back to the RNA-seq data that are available on the public database from COVID patients. Then we can identify, the proteins translated from messenger RNA of severe or mild or whatever degree of COVID-19 pathogenesis. So from there, we get the patient-specific information.
So have you compared this approach to something like RiboSeq? I should think, to like the ribosomal sequencing techniques.
A really good point. So we are trying to do that. That's something we want to do. So RiboSeq certainly have a better correlation with translatome data. You sequence all the actively translating RNA. Instead of doing it for this paper, Nature Immunology review is that we use a M6A the RAPSIC data. The reason for that is one of the translation-related interactor of G9A is the methyl-3, which is RNA methylase, that introduce M6A message RNAs. So we did the RNA M6A RAPSIC, and we compare with label-free proteomic data or translatome data, then we can find the correlation, methyl-3 and the G9A co-regulated proteins undergo translation. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, I love talking about the translatome. It brings back these, I don't know if you saw this video. It was like from the 70s where Berkeley like made this full dance routine of the ribosome. It's crazy. It's bad. It's like there's puffs of smoke. People are like dancing around like codons, but that's been in my brain the whole time you've been talking about the translatome. But I love the protein degradomics essentially. But can we switch gears? So something that we always ask people is kind of how you got to where you are. And you don't have to go all the way back to elementary school when you like saw your first chemistry person, but you can. It doesn't have to be all the way to now, just whatever, like something that happened or whatever part of that you want to tell.
I was trained as a chemist. So I got my PhD in physical organic chemistry from Penn State. Basically, the reason we say physical meaning we were using MR to study mechanism of organic chemistry. Mm-hmm. Organic reactions. At that time I was interested in organic intermediates called enolates. So that tends to form aggregates, different aggregates in organic solvent. or aqueous solution. So from there I learned AMR, right? So then after I got my PhD, I decided to make a shift to molecular biology. So instead of using cylinders, liter cylinders, I was using pipette microliters pipette.
And how nice is it, by the way, to go from giant volumes to little? Because I think for me that's a big deal, right?
Like, yeah, right. That was easier. Yeah, that was shock. But I was very fortunately had a postdoc offer from David Silverman and Phil Lippis at the University of Florida Medical School of Department of Pharmacology and Molecular Biology. So they were so candidly allowing me to learn molecular biology. As I recall, they put me in a month's intensive courses of molecular biology and cell biology in medical school. In the first month of my postdoc, so they paid my training at that time. Then I was able to do pipetting on bench. Then learn the molecular biology, molecular cloning, protein expression. So at that time, we were making site-directed mutagenesis. We were making all kinds of mutants or carbohydrates. Then study structure-function relationship, kinetics, those kind of thing.
Are you doing X-rays at this point, or like making crystals, or just purifying?
MR is an aqueous solution.
Oh, sorry. Got it. Yeah, got it.
I think I spent about less than 2 years there. Then I got a postdoc fellowship from Los Alamos National Lab in the Human Genome Center. You may know, the Human Genome Project started from Los Alamos, right? So there, I leveraged my experience of AMR to study DNA structures and the protein structures, protein-DNA interactions. As you know, for AMR, to generate AMR active sample, you need to do stable isotope labeling. So that's where this MyCellec, our name is AACT, amino acid coded mass tagging. That's where the idea came from. So then back to late 90s, I thought mass spec could be a more accurate measurement to distinguish what we call the mass shift, right? So then I introduced, stable isotope labeling culture for DNA, for proteins. So the technique for DNA, we have a patent for that. And because of this introducing this strategy, I will say stable isotope assisted mass spec, I was awarded with PCase, Presidential Early Career Award for scientists and engineering in 1999. I had my independent laboratory, so I sort of intensified my practice with stable isotope labeling for proteomics, for DNA. Yeah. So that's the sort of
PCHEM to molecular biology. And then you're sitting around and you're like, I'm going to make, what was it, AACT, right? Which then is essentially SciLac.
Right. Yeah. So now, we're more, because my organic chemistry background, I'm more involved in the chemical biology. So we use proteomics to reveal new mechanisms of pathogenesis. Then we design inhibitors, of course, in collaboration with my chemist colleagues to develop a therapeutic strategy. So that's where this COVID inhibitor came from. So once we know the mechanism, we know the target. For this COVID-19 case, because we our discovery of this gene IA mediated translation, we found that the drug is more specific, more effective because the translation determine ultimate function of cells, right? So, yeah.
So, I think it's a really interesting path, and I think that, you know, everyone we've talked to has got like kind of a convoluted way to get where they are. So that's you know, we're continuing a theme here. I guess some people are in the lab all the time. You know, and that's okay. But what do you do when you're not in the lab?
Recently, in the past year, I play golf. So some of my colleagues is like, I'm amazed by playing golf. So these days I would say with my wife we play twice a week.
Oh wow!
So my colleague was saying, you know, you looks like a retired man.
Okay.
Yeah. So I used to play soccer. I play a lot in college, and until 2016, I got this rupture on my leg. So I stopped playing soccer, but I love. I love hiking. You know, nowadays playing golf. I set up on my backyard. I set up the golf practice ground, and even small green.
Yeah,
that's great.
Are you good at golf? I mean, like, are you like a ringer at golf? I mean, you sound like you've got some physical skills. So, I mean, are you pretty good at golf, or are you just kind of chasing the ball around?
Yeah, actually, a friend of mine came over last week. He played golf for like 20 years. So I beat him in the first run. I was really lucky. My driver was really good for that particular day. Then, I think I probably have some talent to swing.
I'm horrible. I don't even pretend to do it. I'm not going to do it.
More practice, right?
I've hit the ball like three times, unless you count like mini golf, and I'm pretty good at mini golf. I love mini golf.
I started from there.
Yeah. You mentioned soccer. So are you watching the World Cup or no?
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah.
All right, who you got? Like who's your team?
So of course I'm on US side. I mean the US team, the yesterday game was so exciting. I love Portugal, Argentina.
Is Argentina gonna make it? Are they gonna make it? Is Argentina actually gonna get out, you think?
We'll see today, right?
No.
I hope they will make it. Yeah. I'm very hopeful for there.
I like America's team. I haven't really been following things, but we need to like anchor this in time. America just played Iran yesterday, and the last 10 minutes of stoppage time was insanity. So if anyone's listening to this, that's our reality.
Yeah, another good thing of playing golf is that I can think, you know, while I'm walking, I can think ideas. I pop up some sentences for manuscript.
Do you ever record them? Like as I do this sometimes. If a really good line comes in your head and you just like voice memo.
I should do that.
You don't? Okay. Am I the only one that does that?
I usually just wrote down when I come home.
No, my stuff is like goes in and out.
I think that's like a goldfish, right? Well, that's really smart way. I should do that.
I've tried it, and then you know, if Siri transcribes it, it's always like turtle friends.
Yes, so many turtle friends.
And there's nothing useful. But yeah, maybe I need a different app for it.
Man, you got to teach Siri how you talk. Okay, so I love it. You know, and it's, I mean, you kind of get at that. There are a lot of people that play golf in our community. And I know golf is obviously a great sport, but I like that last part, which is, you know, it gives you some, it's not stillness, but it gives you that like time to think, right? And I think we've seen that also as a trend with some of the speakers. Like they have something that allows their brain to kind of relax and kind of, you know, loosen up a little bit. So that's interesting. Okay. Well, I'm not going to play you in golf. We're going to go to the next part. So have you ever been to Chicago?
Oh, of course.
Of course. Okay. You've been like a lot. Have you spent time there?
I love the city. Certainly I made a lot of connections, flight connections there. We did with my family. We had a few tours there. It's wonderful city. So I look forward.
Have you ever been to the Drake Hotel? So it's at the Drake. Have you been there? So it's some fancy hotel, and apparently it's cheap because it's a frozen tundra. I'm exaggerating, but okay. So do you know anything about the Drake? Just cut me off if you do.
I don't know. Yeah, to be honest. Okay,
so I learned something about the Drake aside from previously I talked about it being haunted. Do you know this too? There's a tea service. So they have like a tea room and it's like super fancy. You know, you need to call ahead. I've never been to one of these rooms, but it looks really fancy. I'm pretty sure you probably need a jacket, maybe like a pocket square, maybe a monocle. So I don't know. I've never been to a tea service, period, much less somewhere that's like fancy. But yeah, so when you go, there's a tea room.
Service like a Japanese type?
It's like more like a British-y type, you know, like where it's like a lot of fine china. You're sitting there. Everything's very over the top decorations. You know, you need to look nice. It lasts like an hour. But I guess, you know, technically, I guess those are kind of derived from the same source, right? Like the British were influenced by like a Chinese tea service. Anyways, that is on my list now. But you have to make reservations. It's like people come from other places to the Drake to do the tea.
So some background: Ben is in Columbia, South Carolina. He's trying to find any excuse to not leave a hotel in March because because he's never experienced snow before.
It's a bit of an exaggeration, but yeah, I am looking for some fun things to do in the hotel. Actually, it happened because I was calling the hotel to make sure like my reservation was there. And like the first 5 minutes of the messages that you get when you call is about the tea room.
I need to make a reservation. I haven't made a hotel reservation yet.
You should do that. It's a really good group rate. You can get a river view, water view. It's a lake view. So,
So you can see the big beam there, right? Probably not the reverse side.
Yeah, there's like a big, let's see, we're going to get this so wrong. If anyone's in Chicago or knows geography, but yes, there's a Great Lake that is out the window. And then the other side is a bunch of big, tall buildings. Well, that's awesome. Okay. So any, and then we'll wrap it up, but any recommendations though for Chicago? So like food, random landmark, tea at the Drake.
So, you know, I think for the trips we had tours in Chicago City, my daughter, who is a food scientist, she provide all the guidelines, you know, where to have the signature, signature restaurants or tea service. She knows everything. We just follow her, at that time. Yeah. But I don't remember the names for those places.
No, it's good. But the food was good. You remember the food being good.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good enough. It's not like England where it's like, oh, the food is British. So it's like horrible. If anyone's listening, sorry.
Oh, I love the food in England. I just had a meal. London. So I was there last month for this proteomics in cell biology and the disease mechanism meeting in Cambridge. So before that, my family were there during the summer for 2 weeks tour. We have friend that drove us around. I love England. I love London. Such amazing city, you know.
But the food
I
is
love
good.
The food. I mean, of course, they probably not British food.
I was going to say, like, are we talking like weird meat pies and things like that? Or are we talking like, you know, Indian food or something? Sorry, it's called a weird pie.
It's a global city, right?
Yeah.
Yes, global city. And it have all kinds of things. And the English breakfast, we love it. We love that.
And see, I'll go for an English breakfast, right? Like nothing wrong with some blood pudding or, you know, some like hot dogs at breakfast.
I know it's not beans on toast.
Yeah, why not? Lots of toast.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's pretty much it. Ben, Osborne?
Yeah, no, this was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for joining us for this.
Oh, thank you so much. Give me this opportunity to chat.
Well, and we're going to see you in like 3 months.
Yes.
So we'll be sure to see you in real life in Chicago.
Yeah,
in
key service. We'll see each other.
You're going to be me and you. We'll set up a reservation. I'll call them up 3 months early. And I'll bring my top hat. I don't know what I'm supposed to wear. I also don't have nice clothes, so.
Great. They probably love you a top hat.
Yeah,
right. But yeah, no, seriously. Shen, thank you for coming. A lot of fun.
Yeah, nice talking to you.
We have some credits that we need to go over. First off, we also need to say the views expressed are solely ours and not anyone that we might work for. Really, US Hupo sponsored this series, and so a big thank you to them. Johannes for our intro and exit song, Kaylee Kirkwood for the artwork. Also, you should probably subscribe to this wherever you're listening. You can also like it, you can write a bad review, or a nice review, who knows? But please do that wherever you get podcasts, and there's more to come. And thank you for listening.